On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the fantastic Jenny Green for kicking off the weekend. It's Friday, the 7th of May, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Inter-County Hurling is back. Shane McGrath is with us to preview the Alliance League, including Limerick versus Tip.
It's Gillan. Hogan against Gillan. 48 minutes into this monster semi-final in Cork. Shoots and scores.
Yeah, that's the way to hit him, Gerard. Plenty enough power on it. You know, he didn't go for the rocket because you might miss hit it.
So now it's a giant-sized task confronting Tipperary.
Fergal Brennan and Alan Cawley talk football as Man City welcome Chelsea.
Believe me what I said, there is not one thought about the final of the Champions League because we don't have the Premier League in our hands. So when we have the Premier League, and after, of course, the focus will be the final of the Champions League.
Plus, we've Jane Mangan on why the racing is about so much more than National Hunt. And in boxing, Gavin Casey sets us up for Canelo versus Saunders.
I'm here for a reason, and there's no other reason for me to be here apart from win. Not about fame, not about anything else, not about publicity, win. We've had a lot of people turn up, fly in, collect checks and fly out, but we haven't had the heart and soul and the IQ that I will bring to the table and to the ring on Saturday night to win.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Marie, I know there's a lot going on, but you can even hear it in your voice. You must be glad that we're back and there's hurling this weekend. I know you're sports mad, but, you know, GA being back on the TV, I'd say it's as good as a vaccine to you.
Yeah, look, you're not wrong there. I think I'm delighted. And most GA fans, anyway, I'd say, are like me now. They're edge of the seat stuff. Just can't wait for it to kick off again. It's been such a long time just waiting for it to... just to get back going again. And we didn't know, I think, for so long as well, which was the difficult part of it, that you're kind of waiting, hoping, didn't know when we were ever going to come out of lockdown. But look, the sun is shining, it's perfect hurling weather, some really brilliant matches. I know Championship is around the corner and there's been questions asked about the league and what it was going to look like and how teams are going to approach it. But I think no matter what, when those players get out over the weekend, they're going to be going hell for leather because they'll have missed it just as much as we will have.
Yeah, and well done to them all last year. Winter hurling, you're right. See, like, the only thing that should be played in the winter is rugby and horse racing. That's it. All the rest leave. But this is summer weather, and you're right, it should just be incredible. And it's hopefully something we can all get behind and just be, you know, a bit of county pride all over again. It'd be great.
That's for sure. And the championship's going to come around really quick as well, and we'll be full throttle then for the summer.
Exactly, exactly. Do you know what? I used to love this part of the season where rugby started moving out of the back pages, slowly started to creep less and less. Now, there's an awful lot of it this weekend and there will be more with the Lions, but where other sports start to take their time and nearly just boot it out. But there's big games tonight, obviously on Radio 1 Extra. We have Ulster travelling down to take on Munster in the Rainbow Cup, and that's with Michael Corcoran and Mick Sherry are covering that, if you want to hear it from 8 o'clock on Radio 1 Extra. And it should be a great game, Marie. I'm excited about it. Obviously, it always helps when you've a few lines on the pitch, and for Munster they're going to have Tadhg Byrne and three-time line Conor Murray, and Ian Henderson will captain Ulster. But I'm excited about some of the backs within the Ulster team. Will Addison will go out in the centre, which I haven't seen him a whole lot there, and Michael Lowry at 10, so that will be exciting. I've seen him play a fullback and he's really exciting, he's electric. But I think, you know, with all the talk about that position and where's the depth within it, just to have more players playing there should be good. I'm also interested in the players who will be disappointed. And you look at, you know, the likes of CJ Stander, Peter O'Mahony, Jacob Stockdale, they'll be a little sore. You know, like, I know the high profile ones everyone talks about, but they'll be a bit disappointed. And then tomorrow night, Connacht will take on Leinster, and there's been three lines named in that team. So Andrew Porter and Jack Conan will start for Leinster. Tadhg Furlong is on the bench and will hopefully be introduced at some point, and Jared Butler will captain Connacht. So there's good interpros this weekend, should be a great weekend of it.
And from now until the Lions, everything we talk about is going to be around the line. So every team, every match will be lines in that. There'll be no lines in that one. How do the lines get on? How do the lines, the guys who didn't make the lines get on?
Yeah, it's exactly it. And do you know what? Like we said last night, there'll be a few changes, 37 guys named. I actually think these lads are dead right to go out and play. You know, an awful lot of people would think put them in a box and just open them when they get to South Africa, with the exception of Tadhg Furlong. You know?
The only announcement...
Just send Tadhg Furlong in a box over to South Africa and say open on test one. There's another one. I think there's been so much going on, but there hasn't been a whole lot of noise about his contract, and that's one I'm really waiting on. Like, can we get Tadhg Furlong nailed down, please, with his contract sorted some bit? Because I just think he's so important to Irish rugby.
Big time, that's for sure. Yeah. And looking forward to seeing him if he does get a run at some stage. Right, let's turn our attention to hurling now, Donica. We've waited long enough. It has felt like an eternity for GAA fans, but this weekend it's back and it's going to take centre stage. So we've reigning All-Ireland and League Champions Limerick playing Tipperary tomorrow, and then over the course of the weekend, Westmeath play Galway, Dublin play Kilkenny, Cork play Waterford, Wexford play Leash, and Antrim play Clare. Shane McGrath is with us to talk us through all the action. Shane, are you excited?
As my friend Borat would say, very excited. And we know now, Marie, that the world is healing because the sun is shining, vaccines are being rolled out, the hurling is back, and Liverpool having hope of winning that game this year. So
Shane,
the world is healing and things are going
digs.
Back. Things are going back to normal, you know?
I'd expect less from a Tipperary person.
You'd know he's not in studio, wouldn't you?
You really would. Well, Shane, I might as well get stuck in. So just going on the head-to-head of Tip and Limerick, is it about time that Tipperary start beating Limerick again?
Yeah, it probably is, Marie. You're dead right. I was just going through them there today. Out of the last six times they met between league and championship, Limerick have actually won five. So the last time Tip bet Limerick was in 2018 in the league semi-final. Went to extra time and Tip won by a goal, 231-131. So Limerick, this Limerick group particularly, have had Tip's number for some time now, and in the really, really big matches they've come out and they've actually won pretty well. Like last year they bet Tip by 9 points in the championship, and in the year before in the Munster final, you know, they won by 12. It could have been double that, really. They were so good on the day in the Munster final, and they don't seem to be easing up any bit at all, Marie. They've nine of their All-Ireland final winning team playing, and on the bench they have the likes of Keane Lynch, Peter Casey, just to name a couple, and a young lad called Garrod Hegarty, who did a bit of hurling last year and wasn't too bad either. So, like, you know, they're really going for this. And I think the thing with Limerick, Marie, is no matter what league team they put out this year, they have the strongest panel in the hurling at the moment. So whoever's on there, John Kiley, Paul Kinnork and the management team, will look at him and say, look, this is your chance to impress. There won't be another chance for you, really. If you can do it in this competitive environment, you've a right shot at making the 15 or the 20 or the 26 for match day. So I think Limerick are looking very, very strong, and I think they've set out their stall early on that, you know, they're going to go for this. They're going for three in a row in the league too, lads, I suppose, which is, you know, bar the Kilkenny teams, you know, it hasn't really been done in a long, long time. And interesting for me as well that William Dunne, who was captain, it just shows you, I think it shows what a leader he is within that group. I kind of compare him to Roy Keane, I suppose, in that he mightn't get all the credit all the time, but he's vital to Limerick's success there in midfield, gets on a lot of ball, and he's obviously very well thought of within the Limerick panel and by John Kiley. So interesting to see that he's the captain in the absence of Declan Hannan not featuring at the weekend. But should be interesting one. I suppose Tip haven't named their team either, lads, so it'll be interesting to see what Tip team actually takes to the pitch tomorrow evening as well. Like,
it will, because a lot of the narrative leading into this match, Shane, has been about Liam Sheedy and how he's going to manage his group of players, because there is such a mix of those really experienced players like the Mars and Jamie Callan, and then the young lads coming through as well, and trying to get that balance of giving the older lads a chance, and also the fact that he probably should be loyal to them because they have given him so much over the years, but also getting those younger lads up to speed, because you know yourself, it is a big step up going from minor or 20 up to senior level, so they need to get that game time. How do you think Liam Sheedy is going to approach this?
Like, I think what most managers will want to get out of the league, Marie, is, like, you know, is for me, is to build a panel. And I think that's what Liam Sheedy is going to want to do. He's going to want to try and get a few guys in. I suppose one guy that a lot of people may have heard of or not have heard of is a guy called Alan Tynan, and he would have been involved. Dunnick, I'm sure you might have heard him there. He was with Munster development squads, and he won a Leinster Schools medal with Cistercians and Roscrea. So he's kind of come back from the rugby world. He had a really good year with his club, Roscrea, last year, especially the latter ends of the championship. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes. You know, there's another guy, Brian O'Mara, he's from Holy Cross. He's another talent that he's very, very close to. So it'd be interesting to see if Liam is going to give these guys their chances. Because, you know, as you said, I suppose, the lads you're talking about, you know, the likes of Shamey, Noel, Paddy, Brendan, Bonner, they've a lot of hurling done. And I suppose what Liam is looking for them to be at their peak is come the end of June, start of July, when you're getting ready for a Munster semi-final and the championship. So, like, I said it last week as well, you know, I don't know if people agree or not, but for me, the last few years, the league has kind of meant less and less, and I think the league doesn't really mean a lot. I know, as you said, Marie, I was listening at the start of the show, the players who were picked at the weekend will go out and do their best and try and win the games, but like at the end of the day, whoever tops Division 1A, if they meet the winners of Division 1B in the championship, that will be the league final. If not, the league is kind of just, it's kind of shared, like, so, you know, there's no incentive of getting to a league final as such unless they meet in the championship. So I think what managers and what panels are looking to get out of it is, can we build a really strong panel? And I suppose they'll all probably pick a match or two, Marie, that they'll really want to peak for. Tip are playing Galway their third match. So they have two games under their belts. Maybe they're peaking for that, whereas in the 1B, you know, with all due respect to the Antrims and maybe the Leashes, you know, that like Kilkenny are probably looking to maybe peak for the Wexford game or for the Clare game. So that's what I think managers will be looking to get out of the league this year, Marie.
But Shane, it's fascinating when you say that, because there's the balancing act already. You mentioned this, they've lost 5 times out of 6 games, you know, and the transition and squad for Liam Sheedy there, like, it's a big, big game.
Oh, it is. It is a big, and it's always a big game between ourselves and Limerick Donegal, you know. And there's never much between us, you know. But I suppose Limerick have had their number now the last few years. So I suppose, you know, yourself in sport, you just can't beat winning, like, and winning breeds confidence. And you go back in training next week absolutely buzzing. So, like, I've no doubt about it. Like, Tip and Limerick and all the league fixtures this weekend, everybody's going to be going to try and win this game. You know, you want to just get totally rid of last year now, because the league is on, it's a new year, it's getting going again, and the best way to do it is try and get a win. So I've no doubt about it, whoever is going is going to be hell-bent for winning it. But look, we're all human at the end of the day, in that I'm sure there is that thing in the back of your mind that, you know, there is, like, you know, there is no league semi-final, there is no league final. You know, we're using this to get ready for a championship, and that's I think that's only natural, that's only human, that all the players know, right, I want to play well here so I can be in the picture come championship time. That's what I feel, you know, everybody will be thinking, like, for the league. Like,
what about the, as Donica said there, the fact that it's Limerick who keep beating Tip these days, does that for you mean that Limerick are in Tip's heads?
I don't know, maybe it is. Like, I mean, I think you go back, even if you compare it to the rugby thing with Leinster and Munster, and Munster had their number for a while, and then I suppose Leinster had their number for a while, and that, you know, is there that psychological thing, like teams maybe playing Kilkenny in recent times, that were they bet before they stepped onto the pitch? Like, so I personally don't think they are in their heads. I just feel they've bet Tip because they have been, they've been superior than them in recent times, and they have performed on the day. I do honestly think that this is a really, really good bunch of Tipperary players, and I just feel maybe they just haven't performed against Limerick, whatever it is, if it's psychological or not, they just haven't done it on the day. Limerick have done it, they did it in the Munster final 2 years ago, they did it in Páirc Uí Chaoimh last year, they were far the better team. So I think it'll be important for Tip to perform, really, whether they win or not. I don't think that really matters too much, but I think it'll be important for the group to get a performance against Limerick, because look, let's face it, lads, Limerick are the standard at the moment. They are the team to beat. If you can perform against them, regardless of who they have or not in the field, you're not doing too bad, or you've made a really good start to the year. Like,
The rules are going to be interesting as well. Now, we've went over them quite a bit this week already, so we're not going to go back over them, Shane. But what could be something worth keeping an eye on in that Tip Limerick match is the Mair Fuaire, because it's been discontinued with immediate effect, and just how teams are going to approach that now when it comes to setups, and maybe even what other sports they're going to be looking at to seeing the best way to get messages down to teams.
Yeah, like, I was just, you know, reading up about it, you know, and I suppose they maybe wanted to bring it in before, I think, but they got it through this year. And like, for me, the reason it's in, Marie, is because of probably a few high profile cases, and they've kind of said, look, we just don't want Mair Fuaire interfering with players. Everyone remembers, I suppose, Greg Kennedy down in Nolan Park, and the ball was in play and he caught the ball, and, you know, all these things. And even in the football finals with Dublin and Kerry, the Mair Fuaire is coming in a lot. So they probably just said, look, enough is enough. The players have enough to worry about without the Mair Fuaire coming on the pitch. I think it'll be very interesting, because I look at the likes of Paul Kinnurk and Mikey Beavens as being, you know, top coaches, yeah. And the influence they can have just coming in and getting a quick word in a guy's ear, you know, during a game, you know, especially in the more high intensity games. Like, I think for me that the GAA lads might see that, look, what's the point of me being on the sideline here now, especially when crowds come back? You know, it might be okay now because you don't have much crowds, they'll be able to hear what you're saying, but when crowds come back, like, you're just shouting in, like, the players won't even be able to hear you, they won't be allowed to go on the field. So for me, it's a couple of things. I think the GAA might take a leaf out of the rugby book, and the managers might feel, look, the coach is the guy who can see things maybe better than me, he's maybe more tactically astute than me, maybe the best place for him or her is up in the stands or somewhere in it with a better viewpoint, could get a quick message down at the water break and get the messages at half time. And I think that's the way you could see it go, especially when the crowds start coming back in as well. And for me, the other thing is, whoever's doing the hurleys now, I think they're going to be very, very important, because they're going to be there at the sideline. They might be the people that have an opportunity to get some form of a message in, even if it's shouting in or when you get in with a hurley, if someone does break a hurley. So I think you're going to see, you know, more tactically chosen hurley carriers nowadays. And it sounds crazy, but there you go. There could be trials for who's going to be the hurley carrier. So right, I think all these things will be very interesting.
Yeah,
lads.
It really will. It'll be something to keep an eye on as well. While we're watching the new rules and watching the hurling as well, we'll be busy out watching it. So there are a lot of other games as well. And Cork and Waterford is another really interesting one. Obviously, Waterford were the bolters last year. They came out of nowhere and had a really, really good season. But Cork are the one that people are so curious about, because we know what they're capable of. We know that they have a lot of good hurlers down there, but they can't seem to find that consistency. Do you think that this year, 2021, the year of change, is going to be the year where we see Cork hurling get back to its best, Shane?
No.
Please say, right. Hang up on him.
I don't know. And I you know, you see, like, Anthony Nash has gone there now. He's been a big figure for them, you know, and, you know, someone else will step into the boots. And even you're looking at Pat Horgan, he's 33, I believe he's going to be 34 this month. I mean, how long more has he left? It's probably coming towards the end for him, like. So I just don't know. Like, I mean, I was at the match last year, this fixture last year, last January, and Waterford and Cork, and it was the first kind of glimpse we had of this Waterford team, the way they were going to hurl with their work rate and their teamwork and the way everybody was working for each other, and the kind of the physical game that they were bringing. And they won that by a point, but they were much better than Cork on the day. Cork got two or three goals at the start of the game, and, you know, they really brought it back. And even in the championship, Marie, like, Waterford beat them 128-124, but I was at that game as well, and Waterford were much the better team. They used the ball better. There seemed to be more of a team than Cork. So, look, I think it's a massive year for Cork, as I mentioned about Pat Horgan as well. He's, you know, time is ticking for him. It's coming towards an end, and maybe several others of them. And it's been a long, long time now since Cork have had success. And you go back to 2005, since the last time that they won an All-Ireland. You know, it's a long time for a county like Cork. So, but I just think Waterford don't fear Cork. Bet them in the championship and the league last year. Liam Cahill has an unbelievable record against Cork teams as well, Marie, even when he was with Tip, with the minors and the under-20s, under-21s. He won't fear playing Cork either, you know, as a manager, and I'm sure he'll have that drilled into the Waterford lads. You know, the match being on Páirc Uí Chaoimh, it's a fabulous pitch, big pitch. You know, if Cork get going, they could, you know, they could do well. But I just think this Waterford team, they've lots of confidence from last year. Ty De Burke is a massive loss. you know, whenever they can get him back, because he and if they can get him back from the cruciate injury, he'll be massive to him. But I just feel that Watford don't fear
that Dara Fives and Porrig Mahony could be out as well with injury.
Yeah. Look, it is hard going. But look how well they hurled Marie last year without Porrig Mahony. You know, they really are a team, and I suppose they would have unearthed a lot of other talent last year, the likes of Fagan and these guys, you know, who kind of stepped up to the plate, and there would have been unknowns to a lot of us outside Waterford, but a lot of people within Waterford, and Liam Cahill obviously have great time for him. And so look, it'll be an opportunity for someone else, but I actually do feel that Waterford will go down there. The last time they were down there, sure, was against your own county, Marie, as well, and they hurled very well that night, so they won't mind them going down hurling a Páirc Uí Chaoimh either.
Shane, it'd be brilliant if Waterford could build on last year. But for Kieran Kingston, he's made some hard calls over the winter, and you know, you mentioned a few of them within the squad, but also bringing in the likes of Donal O'Grady. Do you expect to see a bit more from Cork?
Well, you know, Donal O'Grady would be so well got down there, Donegal. He's so respected for what he did, you know, as a player and as a former manager, like with Cork, and his knowledge of the game is second to none. Anyone will tell you that if you just meet him at a game. You know, he knows everything. He knows how everyone is going with their clubs in Cork, with their schools in Cork, with their colleges and everything. So he'll obviously bring, you know, a lot of that, you know, real traditional Cork hurling stuff, and like, you know, real kind of pride stuff. And I've heard he's a fantastic guy in the dressing room as well to talk and motivate a team. So look, straight off the bat, before he says a word, he'll have the respect of the whole group, because they'll know what he has done before. And you know, Kingston has brought him in because he has huge respect for him as well. So look, it will be an addition, but at the end of the day, I think it's down to the Cork players now to kind of stand up. And I suppose they have this tag, Dunica, of kind of being a lovely hurling team, but you know, and that, but that when push comes to shove, they find it hard to get over the line. And you know, whether they like hearing that or not, that is the truth of it. They are fantastic hurlers, and if it came down to a skills competition, you wouldn't beat them. But winning championship isn't about a skills competition. It's about which team works the hardest, wants it the most, and that's what's been lacking from Cork for a while now. And you know, they'll have a lot of questions to answer this year. And look, a great opportunity for them in their home pitch on Sunday to do that, Dunica.
Yeah, and winning championships are the measure of success as well, Shane. And we'll move on to Kilkenny and Dublin. A few question marks over the Kilkenny team, particularly the attack this year, and looking for support for TJ Reid. Who's going to do it with Colin Fennelly not around?
Yeah, look, and like, there's always this debate, Marie, about like who was better, De Shefflin or TJ Reid debate and all this. And people are going to roar at the radio now when they say this, but for me, TJ Reid is one of, if not their greatest hurlers, and he's up there with the greatest of all time. Because Henry, while he was unbelievable, where's Shane McGrath going talking about Henry Shefflin like this, you know? But it's just my opinion, in that he was on such a good team, he was on an unbelievable team, and in my opinion, the greatest hurling team of all time, that maybe if it didn't work for him one or two days for Henry, you know, Owen Larkin might have an unreal game, Eddie Brennan, Richie Power, Taggy Fogarty, you know, just Michael Finlay. I could go on and on and on, like, you know, all-star hurlers of the year. Whereas TJ, you know, has had to be the kind of the main figure for them. And if it doesn't happen for him, more often than not, Kilkenny don't get the win, like. So, like, he will really need a big help this year if Kilkenny are going to do something. But you know, they just have this ability of winning games really when they're not supposed to, or you know, even what they did in the Leinster Championship last year. You know, not many people outside of their own group probably would have given them a chance of winning that Leinster final, but they have a belief and they have a tradition of, you know, we are Kilkenny and we should be winning, and you know, that's in their mind as well, you know, and it often brings out the best in a lot of them. But it'd be interesting to see who does step up. I'm not 100% on Adrian Mullen's injury, how he is, and if he's going to be back or not. If he is, he'll be a massive help.
He's starting for a start in 15
months.
He's
a great talent. He's a great guy to have back, and he'll be busting for road after missing out there last year. Like, so, you know, the likes of him and young Cody as well from TJ's club as well, you know. So there's three guys from the same club that are hoping to be three of the main attackers for Kilkenny. So, you know, you know, obviously with Richie Hogan, he mightn't feature all the time, but again, might be a very important figure to have around the place. But look, I think Kilkenny this time last year, Marie, they gave Dublin a nice clip and they get beaten by 12 points. The only thing is, what I think might make them hard for them at the weekend is Parnell Park. It's a hard place to go and get a victory. So, you know, the Dublin lads will really be up for it, like, And they could, they could cause an upset against Kilkenny, but I just think Kilkenny will have too much for them at the weekend, Marie.
Probably more so Parnell when there's crowds there, because they really are on top of the pitch. So what about Wexford and just their season in general? What for Davy does he need to do to achieve success with Wexford, and what are they expecting down there?
Well, like he in fairness to him, he delivered the Leinster Championship, which was a massive thing for him, and that was evident from the homecoming they got, Marie, right? But I think for success for Dave, you know, going back again, and for, in my opinion, probably will be his last year, is getting to an All-Ireland final and winning it. And I think that's what it is. Like if he doesn't do that, he'll probably feel he hasn't achieved the ultimate with the group. I know I've talked about Liverpool already, but I do compare him to Jurgen Klopp, Marie, in that he goes in. He has a kind of a shelf period there. He gets really, really the most out of groups, and then he moves on. And he did it with, you know, he did it with Watford. He did brilliantly. He did it with your own county. Delivered them to the promised land, 2013. You know, is doing it with Wexford, to be fair. And they'll be fierce disappointed how last year went for him. But I feel for Davy and the management team that are there, they're probably saying, look, lads, this is probably our last go at this. So success for him, because he's so driven, and what he does, everything in his life, in sport, in business, even when he's playing golf, is he wants to, you know, he wants to be number one. And ultimate success for this year for Wexford will be getting to that All-Ireland final, so close 2 years ago. Last year very disappointing for them, so that's what he will look at, you know. And you know, against Leash, they'll be looking to kickstart their season, especially down in Wexford Park as well. It'll be interesting to see how the Leash lads react to Cheddar being back as well, because they'd have, you know, he'd be so well got down Leash hurling. He's, you know, he's the guru down there, you know. He's the man that instilled confidence in him when a lot of people didn't. And he should get a good reaction out of him, but I feel Wexford will have too much from down in Wexford Park at the weekend.
You mentioned Marie's Clare. Can they dare to dream this year? They take on Antrim. How do you think, you know,
Dunica, a very brave texter has texted in about it and said, "Ask Shane what score Antrim will be Clare by."
Is that your brother again?
that is an interesting one, though. I tell you what, the match is on in Corrigan Park in West Belfast, and if anyone knows it, you know, it's a fabulous field, and if there was a crowd there, because hurling is going so well, and especially in the likes of Belfast, they've made a massive push for it, and the hurling is really popular up there again, and you've had the most lads from that part of Antrim on the hurling team this year than you've had in a long time. And I was very impressed with him in the McDonagh final last year, before the senior, the Lee McCarthy final. They looked really professional, you know. They looked really fit. They were much better than Kerry. Like they made very hard work of it. So I think Antrim are looking at this, Marie, as their chance to cause a big upset, because, you know, their next round next week, they have to go away to Kilkenny. That's going to be a very hard one, even mentally, you know. Then they have to go away to Dublin, they're home to Wexford, and in their last game then they're home to Leash. So like, if they're looking to kind of really kickstart the year and you know, kind of avoid that relegation, like, which that's, let's be honest, that's what they'll be aiming for. That's what Darren Dleas will be aiming for. They'll be hoping to cause an upset at the weekend. And I'm not sure about the Clare boys' travel plans. They probably will go up tomorrow, Marie, I presume, and you know, break the journey, because I think their game is a 2 o'clock throw-in on Sunday, so it'd be a non-runner to go up. Unless you go back to the glory days in the 90s now, and Gerlach Nan gets him a plane and flies him up, maybe. So
the Tigers back.
Who knows? But look, it'll be interesting to see. And look, Clare, or look, Marie, like, with everything, it's like there's been a lot of bad press in your own county, you know, with things going on and a lot of bad stories and controversy. But it's great to see, you know, from a hurling point of view and from a sports fan. I know a lot of people in Clare. I went to school in Flannans. You know, you're a great hurling county. You love your hurling and everything, and football and everything down there. And see Club Clare up and running. So
yeah,
it'll be massive for the group for them to get the win, because, you know, they will be very, very much hot favourites. So it's a case of damned if you do, but really damned if you don't for the Clare lads at the weekend. But I do expect Clare to win, but I do think Antrim will put it up to them. You know, they were good in the league last time they were there. They ran Galway and Dublin close when they were in it in 2018. So they will really target this game as, look, we're here now, we're up with the big guns, and you know, we're not going to be pushed around too easy either.
Well, you've made it sound very interesting. Anyway, I'll be keeping an eye on it. Shane McGrath, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the weekend. I think all of us will, especially with the nice sunny weather. Perfect for hurling. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're back with football. 2FM.
Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, another day, another stage win for Sam Bennett. He took his second win in 3 days at the Tour of the Algarve when he left all his rivals in the dust at the end of the third stage. And here's how he finished.
Danny Van Poppel is also here. Likewise, Kurt Krosu picks it up. He's going solo for Delco right now with the white helmet. Sam Bennett still being guided in. Sam Bennett, it looks like he's going to have some fun yet again. Ackermann's out of position, way out of position and way out of line for the time being. Oh, but Sam Bennett, imperious on the ramp, says that one belongs to me, as so many have in the past. And it's slipped.
Now, another good day for Sam Bennett. Right, turning our attention to football, I'm delighted to say that Alan Cawley joins us on the line now. And Alan is at the Dundalk Sligo Rovers game for us. Alan, interestingly, the big teams are in action against each other, and Dundalk and Sligo, the first one up.
Yeah, definitely, Marie. It's a big weekend in terms of the league and the clubs that are facing each other. Obviously, as you say, they're a huge game tonight. Now, albeit Dundalk, even though they're obviously one of the biggest clubs, as we know, they're having a difficult start to the season. So they're in sixth place, but they're still regarded as obviously one of the biggest that we have in the country. So they're playing third place Sligo Rovers tonight, and I think they need to get back on track, to be honest with you, Marie. They had a very disappointing result last week against Longford on Bank Holiday Monday, drawn 2-2. And that was coming off the back of two wins, and we thought they may have been back on track, but that was a very disappointing result. And to come up against the Sligo Oversight tonight, who've had a really positive start to the season, they're in third place, played 9 games, they've won 4, drawn 4, and they've only lost 1. So they're in a rich vein of form themselves. Even though their last 3 games, they've only picked up 1 win. But it'll be interesting to see how they get on tonight, and I'm really looking forward to the game, Marie.
Yeah, for sure. There is a game at the moment already with Derry City and Longford Town. Half time there, and it is nil all up at the Brandywell. And then tomorrow, the really big one is the top two, Shamrock Rovers and St Patrick's Athletic. And before we get into the action, it's been a really good run now for Shamrock Rovers. 31 games unbeaten, a record in the league. It's an incredible feat, but even more so when you think back to just a couple of years ago when Stephen Bradley wasn't doing so well at the club. The fans were in there. They had unfurled banners saying, get rid of Bradley. And look what he's done. They stuck with him. The club stuck with him, and he has gone on to do something really remarkable.
Yeah, they've been absolutely proved right, to be fair, Marie, because as you said, there was a lot of discontent back then. I remember it well. I probably would have been one of the ones with concern for him in terms of his future, and voicing that opinion as well. But I think I went back, I think it was around June 2018, and as you said, it was banners unfurled and the fans weren't happy, they wanted him out. But to be fair to the club, rightly or wrongly, in terms of the criticism they may have took at the time, but they stuck to their guns on the decision that they made to stick with the manager. And as you said, it's proved very, very fruitful since, and they've gone on to be very successful. They won the league last year, albeit a shortened season, but they won the league. That was their first league title in a long, long time. They got beaten in the FAI Cup, but as you said, they started unbelievably well again this year in the league, and they're sitting top with St Pat. They broke a record that they held on to themselves. I think it was 30 games before this, which went back as far as 1926. So as you say, 31 games now, Marie, unbeaten. No matter what league you're in, it's a hell of an achievement. And to be fair to Stephen Bradley, he deserves a lot of credit. He's assembled a lot of good players, a brilliant squad. And again, they're the favourites to win the league this year. From what I've seen so far, I think they're going to take a bit of stopping again. I think they're the best team. But I do think St. Pat's have started really, really well, and they will give them a challenge. And I hope the challenge is sustained for the course of the season, because they're beginning to pull away already, Shamrock Rovers. And I'd hate to think that they would pull away like they did last year and we wouldn't have a title race at all.
Yeah, it's hard enough to see it, and I think maybe just because although Shamrock Rovers have been good and they have been winning games, they haven't always had it easy either. You know, there's been a couple of times where it was last minute goals really that got them over the line.
Yeah, they haven't hit the heights at all this year, Marie, and I suppose that's to be expected, really, I think, when you lose the players of the quality of Jack Byrne and Aaron McAniff. Not only were the two Shamrock Rovers' best players, but they were the best players in the league as well, both of them. And obviously Jack got all the plaudits, but Aaron McAniff was a hell of a player as well, and he contributed so much to that team. So if you lose your two best players, obviously there's going to be a bit of a tail-off, and I think that's what's happened this year, despite the fact that they've brought in Sean Hoare, Sean Gannon, Danny Mandrio, Chris McCann, four excellent players themselves in their own right, but they're just not as good maybe as what Jack and what Aaron were giving them. Now, I think Mandrio is beginning to show signs that he has the potential to maybe go on to get to the level of a Jack Byrne or maybe Aramaganif, and he has started very, very well this season. But as you say, they haven't been hitting the heights, but they're still getting the results, and it's all a sign of a good side, Marie, that if you're not playing up to the standard that you can play, but you're still pulling out the results, the 23 points out of 27, they're unbeaten again the start of the year, as we've already outlined going back to last year. So they're the team to beat, and I think they'll only get better with this group of players as well, because to be fair to Steve Bradley, he obviously had no choice losing Jack Byrne and Aaron McInniff. So if there was going to be a bit of a knock-off, the players that he's bringing in, you nearly have to galvanise the thing again and just to, I suppose, look for improvement in what's there. And they are young players, and I think they will improve as they go on. But they're still a team to beat. There's a huge game against St. Patrick's Athletic tomorrow, and I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Now, Fergal Brennan is also with us. Fergal, the Premier League is winding down, but there's still an awful lot happening around the league. And just now it was announced that 9 of the original Super League clubs, including the Premier League's Big Six, have declared their commitment to UEFA and its competitions at continental and domestic level. But 3 who have not renounced the Super League, Real Madrid, Barcelona and Juventus, are set to face appropriate action under UEFA's disciplinary process. So there's a lot happening.
Back from the brink and pulled out of the European Super League have had their wrists slapped by UEFA in the last 48 hours. Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president, has come out quite a few times and said that any club that has been involved, whether they've pulled out or they're staying in, will be punished. As you say, it's only broken in the last half an hour or so. And one of the big kind of takeaways from it is the language in the statement. And I think this idea of committing to UEFA and committing to their institutions and their competitions is based upon the fact that they've now signed an agreement which would be a €100 million fine for any club in future that looks to push for any sort of a breakaway league. So I think what has essentially happened here is UEFA have let off the 9 clubs that have said that, no, we won't join the European Super League, we won't push ahead with the competition. And UEFA have said, well, just to ensure that that doesn't happen, we're going to put in this this £100 million fee that if you do, this is what you'll have to pay. All 9 clubs will also have to pay €15 million before the start of next season. That will then be redistributed by UEFA for grassroots football, youth football, community projects, etc. And they'll also lose 5% of their revenue from next season, which again will be redistributed. For me, looking at this, it's a fair bit to swallow on a Friday evening, but I actually think they've got off relatively lightly when you think of what could have been cut off to them. They could have been thrown out of the competition or suspended for a season. €15 million is obviously a big fee, but when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, clubs are given €15 million just for qualifying for a Champions League before a ball's even kicked. So I think the 9 teams that have been involved can count themselves relatively lucky. The teams that have not formally pulled out, I think it's a case of wait and see, because they could be hit even harder.
Alan, it's been a while, a few weeks, and we should be chatting about United's performance last night, but instead there's talk today that the Glazers are vowing to leave fans have a share in Manchester United, and that's all the talking point now. It's off the pitch.
Yeah, but that's not surprising, Donegan, when you think of, I suppose, the huge news that broke here a couple of weeks ago off the back of the Super League. And even bigger news the following couple of days with the backlash from the fans. So I don't think it's surprising that there's a lot of off-field issues and a lot of discussion around that. And I think it's right as well, because I think this was kind of a landmark moment in football and certainly modern-day football. But I think football in general, over the course of many years it's been going on, this was an absolute... It was the most monumental moment I can remember anyway in what the clubs were trying to do, and the insult and the smack in the face of what they were trying to do to the fans, to the people who obviously love the clubs. So it was a huge moment, so I'm not surprised in the aftermath that we've seen all these statements and we've seen all the discussions going on off the pitch. And I actually think, to be honest with you, Dunica, we've seen the apologies from the clubs, we've seen the statements now, as you say, from the Glazers, and almost trying to go back to the fans to try and appease them. But I think the damage could be irreparable for these clubs. I really do. You saw the protests with Liverpool and Man United before the game last week. The fans, and just how aggrieved they are and how disappointed they are. And as I say, it's going to take an awful lot from these clubs to try and get the fans back on side. That's if they can even achieve that.
Yeah, definitely interesting few months ahead. And Fergal, Istanbul's hosting of the Champions League is now in doubt because the British government have placed Turkey on the coronavirus red list.
Yeah, this is a statement that's come out in the last half an hour. Obviously,
it's been a busy half an hour.
Tell me about it. My phone hasn't stopped. Essentially, they've obviously put Turkey on the red list, which would mean that there'd be quarantine and testing, etc., that will be put in place if fans were allowed to attend. And the UK government have said they don't want fans travelling to Turkey. And I think this will now up the pressure on UEFA to potentially move the game to Wembley. As it stands, UEFA are not keen because they don't want to give too much deference to the FA, to English clubs, obviously on the back of the Super League nonsense, etc. And I think, given the way that things have panned out in the last few weeks, obviously with Dublin losing its games and Wembley tried to bid for them, UEFA blocked that and gave the majority of them to St. Petersburg. I don't actually think it would be a good idea to give it to Wembley. I think, as it stands, this idea of it being in Istanbul, if the teams have to travel in bubbles, they've been travelling in bubbles all season. I just don't think it's worth the risk to be piling fans into stadiums at this stage, whether it's London, Istanbul, etc. And this was discussed before the semi-finals were actually decided, that it was going to be City and Chelsea in the final. So I think there's been movements behind the scenes to try and get this played at Wembley, which I actually think would give a bit of an unfair advantage to the FA moving forward in their dealings with UEFA. If the two teams have to travel in bubbles to Istanbul, that's no issue for them. They've been doing that all season, and that was UEFA's plan all along.
Well, there is a busy weekend of football. We didn't get to talk about any of it, but Manchester City are playing Chelsea over the weekend. It is a dress rehearsal for the Champions League, and victory for Manchester City would see them secure their third Premier League title in 4 years. That's not why we didn't talk about it, honestly. Alan and Fergal, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Firm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on. Racing.
Okay, a dominant national hunt season came to a close, but a summer on the flat could be just as rewarding for all Irish interest. To bring us up to speed, we're delighted to be joined by the great Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very relieved to be back. I'm just after recovering from Punchestown, and now I'm looking forward to what hopefully will be a fruitful summer on the flat for all Irish horses, jockeys and trainers. We've started pretty well with obviously securing both guineas at Newmarket. Well done to Jim Bulger and Aidan O'Brien, and hopefully we'll continue that because Chester has been quite productive for us this week. Just today, Dermot Weld teamed up with Frankie Dettori to win the Chester Cup with Falcon 8, and Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore with Armory won the Huxley Stakes at Group 2. So if anything, the early indicators for this flat season are very, very positive.
Jen, sorry, no, and we'll go on to the flat, but just a quick look back at Punchestown. You mentioned it. Out of the 40 races, Willie Mullins, 19 wins, and maybe it's that we're around Ruby so much that we don't reflect on how great Willie, you know, constantly is, but just for you to give us a bit of an input, for him to be consistently that good.
Yeah, I suppose consistency is the operative word there, Donica, because throughout the season, his horses hold their form. Henry de Bromhead has had a wonderful, wonderful year and a record-breaking year, but he himself will admit maybe that this last week had been tough for his horses. Honeysuckle came out on top. I'd say she won despite probably not being at her best. Look, the opponents are there to try and reach Willie Mullins' level, but at the moment, not only does he have the equine talent, but he's got the personnel as well. The abundance of owners that enjoyed success from Clissutton last week was just remarkable. Over 10 or 12 different jockeys riding them. He's just a phenomenal man, and I'd like to think that, you know, Willie Mullins through the summer as well, when he does run a horse on the flat, they're forced to be reckoned with wherever they go. And to be honest, last week I was just in awe of him and his team.
So Jane, you did mention that we are in the flat season, so what do we have to look forward to ahead of Epsom next month?
Well, very much towards the guineas, we had a number of trials, and then of course we had both guineas at Newmarket last week, and now we're looking towards Derby. We're looking towards Epsom. It's under a month to the Epsom Derby, and now on at Lingfield tomorrow we have the Lingfield Derby trial. 2 years ago this was won by Anthony Van Dyke en route to Epsom success, and Aidan O'Brien sends two across the water, Kyprios and Carlisle Bay, the mount of Ryan Moore and Frankie Dettori. Again, they contest the 250 at Lingfield tomorrow. The Godolphin ADR is favourite, so they're going to have to improve on ratings by £7 to reach the Godolphin Frankel Colt. But Kyprios is a fast improving horse, and I'd say he's a horse we haven't seen the best of yet. So that is on, that is tomorrow at Lingfield. And then of course Leopardstown Derby Trial Day is always a day where we learn an awful lot, and the Derrenstown Stud Derby Trial Stakes is often the strongest of trials for Epsom. Bolshoi Ballet will be a flavour for a lot of people from Ballydoyle, but Max Swinney, the horse from Jim Bulger's Cool Stables, after we saw him with Poetic Flair last Saturday, Jim Bulger and Kevin Manning, a force to be reckoned with, and arguably Max Swinney was one of the best two-year-olds around last year, because he ended his season 6 starts last year, culminating in that wonderful win in the Vertum Futurity at Doncaster. He's the highest rated horse in here, and I think he could be a dark horse for Epsom. He was being spoken about in glowing terms pre the Guineas, didn't go there, and now he's here in a Derby trial over 10 furlongs. He is the horse they all have to beat, and if he turns up any way like he was last year, I think he is something double figure odds, maybe 10-1 for Epsom. He won't be 10-1 if he wins this Derby trial on Sunday at Leopardstown.
Jane, in terms of Jessica Harrington, what interest would she have out here?
Oh, well, Jessica has her team in wonderful form. We saw that at Punchestown, where she had a number of winners. We saw that when Lucky Vega ran a huge race into 2,000 guineas on Saturday for Shane Foley. And in the same Yulong colours, Ace Aussie in the Amethyst Stakes at 2:15 on Sunday. He's a three-year-old taking on his elders, but he's getting an awful lot of weight from them. He's getting 12 pounds at this stage of the year, which is a massive weight concession. It is a mile. I think he's probably reliant on good ground, so hopefully the rain forecast doesn't get into the ground too much at Leopardstown. And I fancy Ace Aussie for big things this season, perhaps even an Irish Derby. So Amethyst Stakes might be a step in the right direction for him. He's taking on his olders, but I would expect him to be putting them away, getting that weight concession.
And what about the Irish 1000 guineas trial, Jane? Joseph O'Brien fields 3 runners, but it seems like an open race.
It absolutely is, and this tends to be a very open race. Joseph has 3, as you say. Dunica has a pair. Paddy Toomey is a very interesting filly in there called Fantasy Lady, who has a prep run under her belt. But I think they all have to go to catch a Sense of Style. She was 3rd last time in another Guineas trial behind Keeper of Time. The 4th that day, Zaffy's Pride has franked the form quite well. Joan of Arc will be very interesting. I think Climate from Jessica Harrington's stable will be very interesting, as will Chandra. But for me, Sense of Soil sets the standard for Joseph O'Brien, who also has Thinking of You and My Generation in there. But all these trials are leading to the big day, and very often on the flat, it's the main summer showpieces across the water that take precedent. But the Guineas at the Curragh, that'll be very much a highlight on my calendar, and I hope that we'll see some key indicators this summer Sunday that'll point us in the right direction for a fortnight's time.
Jane, Ruby was giving Rachel and Paul Townend a bit of a hard time for not riding out last week. No fear that you're taking the weekend off. You're actually in Killarney, is that right?
I am in Killarney, and Ruby is a rich man for saying that. Ruby probably be, after the year they've had, I'd say Ruby and Gillian would be heading to sunnier climes. But yes, I'm down in Killarney on Sunday for a National Hunt card. And look, it's the summertime for National Hunt people. It's the country tracks. It was Downpatrick today. It was Kilbeggan during the week. And it's the time for the country tracks to get their say. And it was a kind of a relief during the week as well, where I'm sure you discussed it on the show, on Taoiseach basically suggested that we might have pilot events to get some people back on track or back to outdoor events this summer, and those country tracks would be dependent on getting people through the turnstiles again, because there is no future and there's no sustainability in having nobody at the tracks. And that's what I'm looking forward to immensely this summer, is seeing a few faces back on track.
Jane, give us a tip for the weekend, something that you'd call that's worth keeping an eye out for.
Well, it has to be, for me, Ace Aussie in the Amethyst Stakes. I think he could be very good. He was 2nd over 7 furlongs, which I think would be an inadequate trip for him, behind no other than Poetic Flair in a Guineas trial. So if that's anything to go by, that form stands up pretty solid, and I think Ace Aussie could be a dark horse for an Irish Derby, if all goes well this weekend.
Yeah, Jane, as always, thanks so much.
Game on! Racing. Game on 2FM.
Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Now to boxing and the big action this weekend. It's a meeting of Billy Joe Saunders and Canelo Alvarez. They will meet in a world super middleweight title unification fight in Texas at the home of the Dallas Cowboys. Canelo's WBA and WBC belts and Saunders' WBO title are all at stake. Gavin Casey of the 42 joins us now. Gav, before we talk about what is going to happen in the ring, let's look at the build-up. It's been particularly nasty, although I'd probably expect that from Saunders.
Yeah, he's once again managed to unite the entire boxing world in hoping he gets starched, I think, over the weekend. And there are plenty of people out there who aren't necessarily the biggest supporters of Canelo either. Both of these guys have in the past failed drugs tests and paid some form of repercussion for that. And then on the behalf of Saunders, you have a guy whose reputation is regularly, routinely dragged through the mud by Saunders himself, through his actions and through some of his infractions out of the ring. So it's one of those ones where I'd imagine some people will find it hard to pick a guy to root for, but a lot of people are rooting for Canelo, I think, just on the basis that Saunders does have that quality to him that seems to draw the ire of people. And in the build-up, some of that has come out. He's tried to do that with Canelo, really, Marie, and I guess you can only sit back and laugh watching him bring up Canelo's failed drug test from his past when Saunders himself has failed drug tests and stuff. So, yeah, nasty as you'd expect, really, with a Saunders fight. He likes to kind of play that antagonistic role in the build-up. Canelo was probably playing along with it to some degree, but he's the kind of guy who's experienced enough. He's been in the ring with Floyd Mayweather and endured that build-up and has a ferocious rivalry with Gennady Golovkin. There's nothing here he hasn't seen or heard before, and I'd imagine it will only inspire him to do the business that little bit more.
So Saunders has said this fight is all about the brain, not about power, muscle or skill. It's the brain and the game plan and being able to execute that game plan. Is he correct?
I mean, every fight is, I suppose, mostly about the brain, but with that in mind, it's probably remarkable that he's made it this far in the sport. You know, he is quite an instinctive fighter and a guy who has fought his whole life. Like he has incredible skill embedded in him at this point. Like the muscle memory is probably phenomenal. But by that same token, I think Canelo is actually a fundamentally better boxer, and he's a boxer at a better stage of his career, probably better stage of his life. The Billy Joe Saunders of what? 4 years ago down at middleweight, I would have anticipated he would have given Canelo some problems down at 160 pounds, but up at 168, Saunders' legs look to have slowed down. He doesn't have that kind of same spring in his step, probably not the same reflexes, and to be honest, famously throughout his career, for the majority of it, he gasses quite drastically in the second half of fights, and that's when Canelo likes to turn the heat up. So particularly because Saunders has been so antagonistic in advance of this fight, I'd imagine Canelo is licking his lips. And look, if it comes down to every fight to some degree comes down to brains and game plans and tactics, but there is obviously that brawn element to it as well. Canelo is a bigger puncher, he's probably a better conditioned fighter, and I think that will pay dividends for him.
So we had a bit of an issue about the ring and the size of the ring. He didn't turn up for the first face to face. What's his problem?
That's the $1 million question. There are probably a lot of answers to it. I think as it pertains to the ring, it was much ado about nothing, Marie, to be honest. He was looking for a ring that was larger than anything he had fought in the past, and I think it was mainly a case of trying to make things difficult for Canelo, maybe planting that seed of doubt as to whether or not Saunders would even show up for the fight. Like, he did mention to Eddie Hearn, either get me the bigger ring or I'm flying home, and Hearn mentioned during the week that he actually believed Saunders when he said that, or at least he was taking no chances. So when he went to Canelo to basically ask him to make a concession on the size of the ring, he was expecting this really difficult conversation, have to sit down at a negotiating table and thrash it out over a few hours. And in the end, Canelo just said, yeah, that's grand. just give him whatever ring he wants. So that kind of speaks, I think, to Melo's confidence as to what he's facing this weekend.
Absolutely. Gav, we're tight in time, but if you had to call it, who wins this?
Canelo by stoppage in the second half, Donny.
Very good. All right, Gav, thanks so much. That's it from myself and Marie. A massive thank you to Ronan and Laura Lee. The brilliant Blonde Tracy's up next. Have the best weekend. We're back Monday at 6.